This is one I've wanted to do for a really long time. 600 episodes in, and we finally got the man, Nate Kading, on the show. A personal hero of mine, coming from the special teams room when I was growing up. It was Robert Gallery, Chad Greenway, Brad Banks, Dallas Clark, and Nate Kading. His face is on the All-American wall. Awesome conversation about all things Iowa, NFL, and beyond. Thank you guys for 600 episodes. Let's have a day. Let's go.
But this was pretty cool. Weather was perfect, and knowing Noah and Corey and all them, it was pretty neat.
Yeah, former Hawkeye was at one point leading the Masters.
That's right, day one. He was
day one.
Seriously?
Yeah, about like what, four holes in, he started off minus two, I think.
Wow. Yeah. He's the kid who just graduated 2 years ago.
No, he ended up transferring. He goes to Florida now.
I think he's still like a college kid. 19. Yeah.
Yeah, he can't even legally buy a beer yet.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah, he took some NIL money down in Florida. He got second in the USAM, which is an automatic qualifier for the Masters and the US Open.
Oh, we got to have this guy on.
Oh, I didn't know he gets to play the US Open, too. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, and, I think it's Pittsburgh this year.
What's his last name?
Noah Kent. I almost said Kading.
It's Nate Kading. He golfed in the Masters. Anybody, we're jumping in halfway casual again here. If Drake was still a host on the show, there would be some grand intro, you know, Grozo Award, All-American, all this stuff. We'll talk about all this. We have Nate Kading on the show today. This is one I've been wanting to do for a while, but I like to save the guys who have their face on the All-American wall in the complex for the big ones. We've had Greenway, we've had Stanzi, we've had Tate, we've had a lot of guys, a lot of dudes. This is the dude for me as a specialist.
We got to stick together, baby.
As a specialist, this is the guy. Keith Duncan did come along, yep, and put another face on that wall. But Nate, you are a true legend in the KF era, in a lot of Hawkeye fans' minds, and a hero for me as a former specialist myself. So thank you for joining the show tonight. We're excited to talk to you.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks for the kind intro. You know, us kickers don't get much love very often, so I appreciate that.
Got to give you the love, man. And you still look young as ever. You still look like you could go swing the leg. when's the last time you legitimately actually kicked a field?
You know what? Kicking is one of those skills that, like, once they're done paying you a lot of money to do it, it's not like you're out with your kids, like, booting a bunch of field goals. But honestly, like, I coach a bunch of camps and work with young kids a lot, and I'll every now and then just kind of bump some, like, no step, one step stuff. But I don't think I've swung, like, a full on, like, 40, 45 yarder since I hung it up 10 plus years ago. So it's, I cringe thinking about what would happen to my groin if I took a couple full swings. But
I was going to say, knowing the ins and outs of that and watching Miguel or Keith or some of the other guys get hurt in their prime doing it, you know, you get a little pull here and there. I wouldn't suggest anyone go and take a full cut.
No, not at all.
Your hip.
I'm like a one dimensional workout guy. Now it's like, get me on a bike or like jogging or something, I'm fine, but don't make me go. No change of direction, no sudden movements, just straightforward one speed.
You're not ripping off like a Kevin Casper 5-10-5 time right now?
No. Yeah, no change of direction, no combine record setting moves out of me.
Ever. You would have been – was Casp during your time or right before you?
Yeah, we overlapped. He was Coach Woods's age, so we would have overlapped 1 year. I think he was that crossover between Hayden and Kirk. They would have been seniors in Kirk's first year. Around then, if I have that right, the math's kind of fuzzy. Now that we're getting ancient, but
no, you're right.
Somewhere around there,
you're right. Kind of a weird time. It's crazy that Kirk is still coaching. First of all, it's not if you know who he is and just kind of guy. But the fact that you are at the beginning of that career and he's still, like we just talked about before this, you have kids that are in high school now.
And like, I know. Yeah.
And you could go like introduce them, like, hey, this is my coach when I was like when I was your age, basically.
Has he coached any father-son duos yet?
Well, Mason. No, but he. That's a great question. Casper would have been like one of the first opportunities, but you got Coach Woods' son now. Yeah. Mason is going to be a freshman, and that's a great question because that very well could be the first one.
Should get Kyler to transfer. He hasn't gotten any meaningful time at Oregon yet. We should get him over.
Yeah, but that's a rare thing, right? That'd be a cool. That's an amazing story. I hadn't thought about that.
I mean, there can only be a handful of coaches who have ever done it. Like, I mean, maybe Joe Pa's got a couple.
It's crazy.
Bear Bryant, how long was he at Alabama? I mean,
Mac Brown.
It's a special thing having him here. I tell people all the time that, you know, we moved back here after we finished in San Diego about 10, 11 years ago. And I said at that time how lucky I was. I felt like, you know, being a kid that's born and raised here in Iowa City, played for Kirk. A lot of my former teammates were assistant coaches. I felt like I was like the luckiest college football fan ever to come back and have your own, your head coach still there. That kind of connection to the program, you know, we bike to the games with our kids now, and we live, you know, here just right in Iowa City, and it's very rare, and of course it irks me like I know it does a lot of other former Kirk players and Hawkeyes, you know, when everybody starts looking around the corner talking about next head coach and all those sort of things. I mean, we gotta
push the present, right?
Yeah, just let's just live in the moment, baby, and just be here and enjoy what we got.
You're on the right podcast for that. We won't go too deep. We've got
a lot of Kirk Homers here, I'm assuming. For sure.
I have been dubbed a Kirk apologist, a Ferentz apologist, actually.
There's been some more slanderous versions of that.
You can't read the message boards, man. I learned that in my previous occupation. So you don't want to do that. That's not good for the psyche at all.
Yeah, did you, Jersey Jewel?
That's funny because I've been sent. We're fortunate enough that this show has grown to a thing where like we have some really diehard fans who are on the message boards. I would never pay for something like that. Certainly not when we were playing, and I don't have enough time or care now to do it. But I'll get sent something every once in a while, and it's been a while. Like, I don't know if you know who Drake Kulik is, Nate.
Yeah.
He used to be the third host of this podcast, and now he's off doing a little something of his own and kind of stepped away from this. But when he was on the show, there was a lot more hot button conversation about us in the forums, I guess.
Sure. A little more hot takes.
Yeah, he's a fiery character, got a lot of opinions.
I like it.
And I've been sent a couple things about us on the message boards where I'm like, damn, that hurts. It's so true. You see a 99 nice things about you, and the one bad thing, you're like, I'm hung up on that. I want to change that guy's mind, right? But did you actually get? Were you like on the San Diego Chargers message boards after like a bad?
Hell no. I mean, you hide the remote at home from your kids and your wife. Like you're listening to like NPR on the ride to work. I mean, you're doing everything known to man to avoid any and all of that. But I do worry about the kids now, right? Like, and I know that I got lucky because it's much more prevalent these days. And you think about these kids, and now they're pseudo professional athletes or professional athletes, however you want to look at it. And they've got to build an online business, right? Like that's part of how they monetize who they are and their brand. And they'd have to be on there building an Instagram and TikTok and Twitter or whatever that looks like. So in some ways, as part of your business, you need to be more tuned into that. Or if you're smart, I guess you have other people handle it. But I always tell young athletes that I mentor, you should do everything, should have a purpose and a point to it. Is this going to help you be a better football player on Saturday? And I've yet to hear any rationale that says checking your DMs and your comments on Instagram or whatever is going to help you go out and nail a game winning 42 yard field goal or do the right pass set if you're the left tackle or be a quarterback and pick up the right read. So it's, you have to think about it, I think, that way and be able to tune those things out because it is part of the game, right? And you gotta clear your head of all that stuff and go out and do what you got to do.
You mentioned the craziness of now, and it was so much easier. I mean, you hung it up when, 2014, 2013?
Yeah, 20. I drafted in 04, and I did 9 years. So, yeah, it would have been moved back here in May of 2013.
So right before, serendipitously, our career started at Iowa, actually.
Yep.
Because that fall was our first season. And 2013, I mean, I think Twitter like had just started to kind of go a little bit. Yeah. Instagram was hardly a thing. There was no TikTok. Like, none of course, the NIL and all that stuff wasn't. We were way far off. We were just. We had two more years until we were getting fed the walk-ons. I mean,
right.
Paying athletes. These guys don't even deserve food. Right. And so it was a lot easier back then. You're now, and we'll maybe get to this towards the end of the story of Nate Kading, but you're like entrepreneur. You've got your hands in multiple businesses, and you sort of have since you've hung it up in the football scene. Do you ever think back of like how your mind works and how you would have approached that now if you had all these quote unquote business opportunities? I mean, you were a kicker, although an All-American one. So you would have had some opportunity there.
Yeah, maybe we would have been like at the you know, get a free car wash or something. We're not inking the Nike deals or the Hy-Vee deals or any stuff like that. But a little bit. I think that spent a lot of time in the NFL and in those locker rooms, what always stood out to me, whether it's LaDainian Tomlinson or Philip Rivers or all the great guys that I played with. I mean, they're a lot of these guys are one dimensional, right? And in good ways. I mean, they're family guys and when they're off the field, but a part of being a professional athlete is putting the blinders on and being able to focus on what you need to focus on and having this relentless obsession with getting as good as you can possibly get at your craft. And I always make the analogy of like, hey, when we're all in junior high or something, we get on the train and some of us get off at the next stop in high school. That's as far as our career goes. And maybe you get off at that stop because you got hurt or you're smoking weed behind the school with your buddies or you're too fat or you're too slow. And some of us are lucky enough to make it onto the varsity team. And some of us go on to play college. And there's a lot of reasons and excuses and options to get off the train and call them distractions or fate or you're not good enough, whatever that looks like. But I mean, you got to start stacking all the right things on top of each other in order to play at an elite level in college. And then, of course, to get onto the NFL. Right. So and some guys are just blessed enough with the skill and the talent where they can eat a couple Big Macs before a game and go out there and have two interceptions and do whatever. But like so the rest of us are just like, we got to have every little detail and no stone left unturned in order to continue on and continue playing and continue to try to get better and better and better. So I think back then it would have become pretty apparent to me that I needed to kind of tune out a lot of that. I think the lucky thing of knowing Kirk and the staff is that I know they have a good support system for the guys. And when it's time to get in that building and do what you got to do and focus on those things, you do it. And now these guys have opportunities off the field. And I think they're good about like drawing that line of demarcation where they can, okay, now I'm the guy that's going to go off and do this sponsorship or shoot this commercial or whatever. And that's great. But I think you really got to be purposeful about not letting that creep into your time and your mental kind of bandwidth to a point where it starts to become a distraction and plays any part, not allowing you to get to the point and reach your full potential.
Yeah. Well, you obviously spend a lot of time with guys in the league and guys who get endorsement deals and such. Would you ever see that kind of creep into NFL locker rooms while you were there? Or
I would say a little bit, but like I said, like the NFL locker rooms, 45 dudes and on the game day roster, 53 on the roster. And like, those are all the guys that are pretty good at it. Right. Like, I mean, yeah, you might get the guy showing up with all the bling and riding the Bentley and the Benz in the parking lot, parking it next to my Toyota Camry or something. Right. But it's like,
hell yeah.
When it's time to play, man, it's time to go. Like you step between the lines. That's a great thing about football and sports at the college and NFL level is like, there's nowhere to hide, right? Like you're coming rushing off the edge and like, you're either going to get to that quarterback or you're going to get blocked or the kick's either in or out or however you want to look at it. And you got to go play. And that's the reality of the situation. So it's, yeah, I mean, those NFL guys, they self-select, right? Like you're doing it and you're there or you're not doing it and you're not there.
If you're not good at it, you get weeded out pretty fast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Probably like one of the more extreme professional examples
right.
of that out
yeah.
there.
Yeah. It's kind of like the people who win the lottery, like the average person who wins the lottery is like broke 2 years later or something like
yeah.
that.
Right. Ain't no faking it out there for sure.
That one track mindset is pretty not only exclusive to the specialist position, the three specialist positions, but it is a little bit more one lane than, say, being a quarterback or having, you know, being a middle linebacker and having a lot to worry about. A lot of guys succeed in that one, just like, mm-hmm. Hey, I have one thing to do. I do the same thing over and over and over again. Is that how you approach kicking, pretty much?
Yeah, I think what I really fell in love with was something that looked to the naked eye super simple, and right when you get into it, but then there's layers to it. And Tyler, you can appreciate this as a specialist, right? Like, there's layers to how you prepare for a game during the week. What are you going to do on Monday? What are you going to do on Friday? And how do you continue to kind of tweak that? What are you going to eat the night before the game? What are you going to read? What's your breathing look like? What's your pregame routine? What are you going to do during warmups? What are you going to do when the ball crosses the 40-yard line on first down? Are you going to kick into the net? Where are you going to be on third down when you're in field goal range? Like, there's all those sort of nuances. And then, like, the world sort of opens up in the offseason. Like, okay, I was 91% last year. I missed 3 field goals. Like, how can I go out next year and be 94% and miss 2 field goals? And breaking things down and finding all these little minute, I call them one percenters, but little small details and things that you can do to improve and be more consistent. Because that's the name of the game as a specialist, is consistency. And how can you just be a better and more consistent person, athlete, in your preparation on game day, a clear mind, healthy body, all of those sort of things. So I really fell in love with that kind of relentless pursuit of continuous improvement. Was something I really, really fell in love with. Frankly, like, I always kind of made this joke with, and it's kind of kicker saying out there, is, you know, all your other teammates want to be you from Monday through Saturday in the NFL, but come Sunday, they wouldn't trade for your position for anything.
Not a chance.
So it was almost like, the Sundays, I don't want to say you dread it, but it's like there's a big sigh of relief when you're leaving the parking lot after the game, because that day's over, right? Like, yeah. And then you're kind of into the worst. I think a lot of the other guys, like, that's their chance to kind of release, and they get to go blow somebody up and run around and play 70 plays where we're playing 8 or 10 or something like that. So, it's the craft, right? Like, you got to love the craft, love the art of improvement, all of those sort of things. And I've always just kind of been wired in that way, where I just became obsessed with, really kind of halfway through high school, with this thing, this kicking thing, right? Like, I just tried to figure out ways to constantly get better at it.
I was going to ask, when was the first time you kicked a ball?
I was a soccer player growing up. Like, I would say pretty much most everybody, if not all the guys now in college and NFL, I'm sure were at some point in time. Probably like a lot of Reese Morgan, obviously Hawkeye coaching legend, was a huge mentor to me. He was my high school football coach. The year I graduated at Iowa City West High and went on to Iowa, Reese also took a job with Kirk that same year. So I was lucky enough to have 4 years with him at West High. Wow. And then another 4 years at Iowa, and just a, you know, great human, amazing person. And he grabbed me when I was a freshman and said, "Hey, shit, we don't have anybody on the sophomore team that can kick. Do you mind doing this?" And yeah, of course I was like 145 pounds, like, you know, backup safety and receiver for the freshman team. Like, yeah, shit, I'll go do this on the sophomore team. Makes sense. And then kind of the same thing happened the next year when the varsity team didn't have a kicker, and kind of started to specialize a little bit more in that, in the fall for football, about halfway through high school, and played basketball and soccer, played all the different sports throughout my high school career, but really started to specialize on that about halfway through my high school career. And like I said, just kind of really enjoyed the off season and during the season, all of it, just going out with a bunch of footballs and spending a couple hours and getting better at it.
Yeah. Kevin, did I cut you off there before that?
Yeah. So I was going to say before, you know, when you're going through like your whole mentality of, you know, kicking a football, it reminds me of KF would always pass out one of your quotes at least once a year. Along the lines of, take it one step at a time. There is no big picture, which I think was great message for a football team, especially teams with, you know, postseason ambitions, you know, winning Big Ten championship, going to college football playoff. It's like, I think he really wanted to hone in on it. It's like, hey, we just got to be good today. We got to have a good practice, a good individual period, a good drill. The rest of the stuff will take care of itself if you do that. So, I mean.
Yeah, the best way I've ever had explained to me is, there's, for athletes, I think the same rings true for business and probably life, for those people out there that are make goals in life in general too, is like you got what I would call dream goals, right? Like the shit that motivates you when you wake up. Like as a kid, you put the poster up of Michael Jordan holding the NBA championship, or you've got the dream stuff that drives you and pushes you and that you really want to accomplish those big picture things. But then that's really kind of this end result. But then there's also this, the process and these little mini goals, little mini objectives that you have to do on a daily basis or weekly basis or in business, like on a quarterly basis. And all of those little goals, they lead up to accomplishing the bigger thing, right? And if you're just sitting there at all points in time, just thinking about, I want to win a championship, or the other way to think about it, if you're getting into the sports psychology, I was like, man, I'm afraid to, you know, to go fail, or I don't want to do that. You're thinking about like the result, whether it's positive or negative, you're losing sight of the fact that there's the process, right? And that's what you really need to focus on. And that's really the microcosm of like a kick or someone shooting a free throw in a game or whatever that might be. There's like those little boxes you need to check in the process of when you're setting up a kick, you find your target, you take your steps, you take your breath, you nod to the holder, you just sort of check those things. And then it's sort of almost like your leg ends up swinging itself and the ball ends up going through the uprights. But if you're sitting there thinking, oh, there's my girlfriend up in row 32 and she's not going to want to talk to me if I miss this kick, or hey, if I make this, I'm going to get a bunch of hot dates tonight, or, you know, you're thinking about all the results and negative or positive consequences of what you're about to do. You lose sight of what you need to be focusing on. So, and I think that plays true in the moment when you're executing that particular kick or play or whatever that might be. But I think it also in the bigger picture of a season, like you said, like that's the real deal as well, because you show up on a Sunday, if you got your ass kicked the previous Saturday and you don't take advantage of that opportunity to get better, I mean, there's something you have to do in that moment, right? That's part of the bigger picture, and you need to focus on that Sunday just the same way. If you had a big win on that side, you gotta find the things you didn't do well and improve on those. And the same thing about a Monday and a Tuesday and all of that sort of things. And you start to really, you can't look out into the horizon much. And I think football is a great, probably the best example of that in sports, because everything is so regimented. Everything's on a week. It's you rinse and repeat the weeks, right? It's 13 of them. You get in that routine. Now you might play a Friday or a Sunday or Thursday or something like that, but it's, you need to get in and each day is an opportunity. And if you aren't focusing on that, or if you're worst case, you're looking in the rearview mirror, you're losing your opportunity to improve and get better in that particular moment.
Did you ever find it hard to, you know, obviously football players, like you said, weekly routine, once you get into season, do you ever, especially as a kicker, find it harder to, you know, really dial in and focus on what you're currently doing instead of just going through the motions? Cause it can get easy. It's like habitual. It's like, hey, it's Monday, we got light practice today and some light kicks or whatever is like that, versus, you know, being very intentional with everything that you're doing.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, that's one of the things that frankly I got probably a little bit more restless with as my NFL career went on, was just the monotony of it. Cause these NFL guys are showing up on like the third week in July, and if you're lucky, you're there January and into February, right? Like that's lot of Groundhog Day shit, like over and over.
It's hard to stay locked in that long.
And Tyler knows this better than anybody, like especially for specialists, right? Like,
right.
It's not a very cerebral thing. Like I think the cool thing about what people don't fully appreciate about all the other positions other than specialists are like, you're going in each week and you're putting in, especially in the NFL, like those guys are dropping in half of or three fourths of a new game plan and playbook and studying and strategy and tactics and what's the opponent doing and how do we react to that, or how do we want to put them on the defensive and what do we want to do. And like, I think there's a lot of people don't give football players enough credit for how creative and cerebral that is for those guys. Whereas for kickers, it's like, all right, shit, what are we going to do today? We're going to go to the driving range. What book can I read this week? And, you know, I go shoot the shit with the equipment managers. Like, it's like, it got frankly like boring to a certain
you know the equipment managers well.
Yeah, you know all those people, man. Like you're best buddies with the third guy cooking the food for lunch, and the athletic trainers, and the guy in marketing. Like like you're kind of doing more things just to like take your mind off of it, honestly, than you are trying to like focus in on something. There's only so much you can do, and you really focus on your body and you get in the course of middle of an NFL season, even as a kicker, you get worn down and you got to be very focused on your training and what you're doing in the weight room and your recovery and all of that stuff, but it's like you got to find ways to take your mind off it, and that can get a little mind numbing at times for sure.
I always thought, Nate, it was a battle almost of you want it in a way to be monotonous, right? Like you want it to be the same, like especially for a long snapper, kicking is a little different. You at least had some distances that would be randomized, right? For me, it was 14 and a half yards, 8 yards.
Every time,
same damn thing every time. So you almost would like to get into a groove of like, yeah, I want this to be the same every time. But mentally, you have to shift before you do each rep to intentionally approach it and not just make it a monotonous approach. Really, it was a dichotomy. It's a great question, Kev, because it is one of the things that's very easy to do, especially for a young college kid who doesn't quite know what he's doing. Is like, you can just, I mean, there were a couple times I remember early in my career where I looked up and it was like week four. And I'm like, man, I've just been snapping for 4 weeks and I don't even know. I don't even know if the last 4 weeks were good or bad. I didn't chart them. I'm just snapping footballs every day. It's a good question. When was it in high school? You know, Coach Morgan, it's crazy how Coach Morgan, by the way, comes up, and I swear to God, Nate,
it's like 2/3 of interviews.
I'm sure.
Like
you're specifically,
that's a credit to Kirk. Like the ability to attract human beings like him and then retain them, right? Like, and you look around there and it's just like the ability to have his staff as long as he's had them is crazy.
He's uniquely integrated into your story because you literally went 4 years and then went with each other to Iowa, which is such a cool thing. But I mean, goddamn, every single guy we talked to is like, well, Coach Morgan showed up at my school at Tuesday at 8:30 PM and met me at
the track practice
and met me at the gym.
Like, yeah.
I don't know if the guy ever slept. So when was it during your high school career where you were like, oh shit, maybe I can kick for the Hawks? Like, when did that come about?
Pretty, like, I was always, like I said, like a multi-sport guy. I mean, obviously that's became what I did upon it, obviously, too. And was like a backup safety or something, but like never really thought of myself as like, oh, I'm a kicker. Like, this is my path. I think you see more of that now. Like, guys specializing than maybe what we did. And I practiced it a lot. But like when it was hoop season, like I was playing basketball, right? Like I wasn't like I was. I would say kind of had sophomore, junior year, really kind of like started getting a little bit of attention. Senior year became kind of a potential or a reality. We weren't getting many scholarships back then. I mean, Hayden and his staff were recruited me through, you know, would have been the off season of my junior year in high school when the Hayden to Kirk transition happened. So I kind of transitioned into new coaches recruiting me as well. And Hayden was definitely of that mentality in the 90s and 80s where like, it was pretty much taboo and rare high school. It was like, hey, come on, walk on. We'll save these scholarships for other places. Right. Whereas I think today, I mean, you pretty much have probably two kicking scholarships for most programs on scholarship at any point in time, and always looking for to backfill in a. It came a little bit later for me, and you know, I got offered by Iowa State first. Dan McCarney was there then, and I think I probably just kind of got lucky from the Hawkeyes, just maybe a little bit of cyclone pressure being a local kid and hanging out there that hadn't been filled yet, and they were almost kind of forced Kirk's hand to burn a scholarship on a kicker.
And lucky you.
I'd say the Iowa fans got their value out of that scholarship.
You came in and would have had a year with 1 year with Jason Baker.
Yeah, Baker was awesome. He was again very detail oriented. He would have been a senior. Of course, Jason went on, had a great NFL career. And I got, you know, didn't protest anything, but, you know, got thrown right in, played as a true freshman, had some ups and downs. Great to have a guy like a Jason who'd been around and seen a bunch of different things. Was very detail oriented, you know, handled it like a pro, learned a lot from him about the craft. And, you know, I think Kirk, it's interesting, right? Like, I mean, I don't know the numbers, but Iowa has to be over the last 20, 25 years had a top 5 field goal percentage, top 10. I don't know, but like, it's just, and I think Kirk and you guys have seen it up close, but I think, you know, he doesn't come from a kicking background, right? But he knows enough to, and I've been around different head coaches in the NFL. I think he knows enough about what he doesn't know to be to the point where, I mean, he'll come up like, you know, give you some tough love every now and then, but he'll also make a point of patting you on the back and saying, hey, you did a good job, and elevating the specialists to a point where they feel like they're valued and they're part of the team also, which is really all you can ask for as a kicker. So, but I think that's been super successful for Kirk. And granted, he's had LeVar now with him forever, and LeVar's a great friend, and he approaches it from a human level as well, right? And kind of understands the nuance of the specialists as well. But I mean, there's been such a great run of kickers at Iowa, and of course Drew there now is an exceptional talent, and he wouldn't surprise me if he's got a long NFL career ahead of him also. So, but there, I mean, you can go through the list, right? I mean, there's been a long stretch of kickers, punters, and, you know, I'm not blowing smoke, Tyler, but I mean, you got to have some great snappers as part of that battery of folks as well. So it's kind of, I mean, but Kirk, he talks about it, right? Like the third phase, special teams, specialists, he doesn't just do it lip service. I mean, it's proven itself out in the results for sure.
It's been an insane run, honestly, of special teams. I will say the 2012, 2013, 2013 was okay. 2014, we dipped. We had a bad year. I'll put that one on me. I'll just take that. I'll take that. Okay. It's my first year starting, but I'll take that. I'm going to put the blame. But yeah, I mean, with Keith, even the guys who like weren't nationally recognized, but like Miguel was so solid. Shudak had an of guys recently, the draft started.
Murray. I mean, Murray. The kicks. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the snappers, the lineage of snappers is like just guys who are so solid, like Olsa and Casey, obviously still playing.
And I think the thing about Kirk is that I think the worst thing you could do as a head coach in football is treat the specialists different and hold them to a different standard, whether that standard is the quirky, leave them off to the side. Like, he just expected you to be an athlete and respect your work and demonstrate that you showed up every day, whether it's in the weight room in the off season or in practice. Like, I think he understood that, like, hey, we're not going to go out there and beat our heads against each other like everybody else does. But like, he expected the same level of professionalism and preparation out of us, and treated us the same way in a both tough love, tough and respect, right? Like, I think both of those. And it wasn't like, hey, just who cares about these guys? Leave them over there. It's like, hey, you got to do it the Iowa way, the way that I expect of everybody. And I think that's sort of the underlying theme with why the specialists have been successful, is that you've always felt like you're held to that same standard.
So I think he did a great job of fostering that, and that, like you said, that made you feel good as a specialist. Mm-hmm. And that was that's a big thing for the specialist kids who are like, I know I'm not the athlete that these guys are, right? But like, if people make me feel part of the team, and it sounds very like seventh grade, like, hey, let Jimmy in, like, get him some reps. But seriously, like, when you feel part of the team, you feel like your teammates truly believe in you and count on you, like, that's a big thing. The other thing that went with that is the fact that from the strength conditioning side, and while I hated it for 2+ years until I finally got there and was like physically capable of being a Division I athlete, the fact that the specialists did all of the same training,
it's huge.
It made you feel very integrated as well, and like that gained you respect from the other team, like your other teammates. So that was big too.
Yeah, and it's like, hey, I'm going to have half as much weight on the squat bar as Greenway or Roth or somebody, right? But it's like, that's to be expected, but like, get in there and bust your ass, right? Like, and you expect the same amount of work ethic and the same standard for everybody.
Yeah. Sorry, Kevin, cut you off again.
I mean, that was going to be my exact question. My question was, does head coach Nate Kading make the kickers do conditioning also? So...
Yeah, you got to for sure. And I mean, you always kind of pride yourself on maybe beating that tight end or something, right? Like, you're in the group that Doyle and those guys threw us into. Like, hey, well, you get it. But I think Kirk has also always, I know part of their recruiting on the specialist side is they want athletes. They don't want just the guy that's focused on kicking or just been this snapper off to the side his whole life. Like, I know that they prioritize that as well. So, and I think that is, if you look at across the NFL, I mean, a lot of the really successful kickers that have had long careers are also guys that have approached it from an athlete's perspective, not a the weird kicker perspective.
Yeah. I mean,
Marshall Kane was one of the best athletes on the team.
Yeah, and he was a freak. Yeah.
Freak. I mean, Doyle used to love to give people shit because I would beat him in a 5-10-5. I mean, I was like, I was his golden boy. You're letting the long snapper kick your ass in a shuttle drill, and Josie and everybody else is looking at him like, dude, that's not fair. Like, this guy runs legitimate times. It's not even like, but going back to the Baker thing, and when you came in, the dynamic of the special teams room has changed significantly, especially when they added the 10th coach. So LeVar Woods is now the full-time special teams coach. But when I was there for the three of the 4 years, four of the five that I was there, there was no coach in the room. Right. And we didn't have that until 2017, my final year. It definitely wasn't a thing when you were there. Mm-hmm. How did you, as a young guy, when you came in, approach getting better and accountability within the position group? And did Baker take a strong role? Were there other guys in the room that took a strong role? And like, hey, we got to, because basically the way that I found it was the way that Casey and Mike Meyer left it. And I'm pretty sure it was just passed on for, you know, 10, 12 years before that, all the way back to you. And it was, there's no one auditing what we do in this room. So you automatically have to grow up and fucking figure it out.
Yeah. Like, no, for sure. I got lucky with Jason being there, and it was, I think there's always sort of been this balance of more seasoned veteran guys that know how to go about their work, coupled with maybe some younger guys that you bring along and do it. You hit it on the head, right? Like having a LeVar there with those guys and being able to keep maybe a little bit more of a steady hand on it only is only helpful. But no doubt. I mean, I think what's cool about having the consistency of a Kirk and a Phil Parker and a LeVar is like, you're able to kind of tell those stories and carry on that level of standard and know how that is. And there's that level of consistency that carries itself through. So I think that's one of the unsung benefits of having a long tenured, a uniquely rare tenure as Kirk and a lot of his staff. I mean, we don't appreciate it nearly as much as we should about how important, I mean, you think about the knock-on effects of having a guy like a Kirk there for that long is so critical in terms of consistency of culture, how things are done, the expectation level within the building, and all of those sort of things. Right. I gave a talk at the at Rotary two falls ago. You know, I was just thinking ahead of time about what to talk. You get asked to talk during the fall football season, being somewhat here in Iowa City, and then I ended up writing an editorial, got published in the Des Moines Register, and I think The Athletic in a few places. But especially in this time of change in the NIL, and that's all everybody talks about, right? Is how much college football is changing. Why don't we think about, like, when everything's changing, what stays the same? Like, what will not be different about college football 10 years from now? And if you think about it through that lens and you think about, like, what makes Kirk Ferentz football and Iowa football uniquely special, how we're able to be competitive in this new era beyond competitive, but win 8-plus games. I know we're not winning national titles like some of the message board trolls want us to do it all the time, but like, it's those things that are hallmarks of a Kirk Ferentz football team that are the universal truths of the game. It's development, it's work ethic, it's teamwork, really stuck in his ways, doesn't want to change, whatever. But like, I can promise you, we're going to look back on it 10 years from now and people are going to be like, the people that doubled down on those things or tripled down on those things or didn't change those universal truths, those are the programs that are going to be winning. As everything else swirled around you and people weren't running to the next shiny, you know, the newest, shiniest thing, like, I think that's now it's hard to maybe appreciate it for some people, but I can promise you, in hindsight, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, that's going to be true.
Yeah. I have a question that is more of a, like, I'm curious your take on it as a snapper. And my best example is in 2017, Amani Hooker picks off RJ. What was his name? Not Barrett. JT Barrett. First play of the game, takes it in. They're number five in the country or whatever. And we just lit the place on fire to start the game. But like, as a specialist, we're on defense, right? Like, I'm chilling. I just came off the field. Like, I'm expecting 10, 12 minutes before it's time to get up and get loose. Sudden change. Doyle's favorite term, sudden change. Mm-hmm. I now get no warm-up rep. Like, we're running on the field like it's time to kick a PAT. Not a big deal. Like, you get it done. But it's my best example of, as a specialist, you kind of have to drop the emotion that comes with the game of football. And, yeah. Like, holy shit, I'm so excited that we just, like, because I am. I'm so stoked for us that we just scored a touchdown. But if I let those emotions get to me, I'm not going to be able to feel my arms. And like, I'm trying to celebrate with the team, but I also have to snap this ball. Same with you. If I'm like, if I'm all uppity, like I'm going to kick this thing wide right.
Yeah. Yeah.
What 4 years of starting in the Big Ten and having several big moments did to me was it almost like cauterized my emotional side of being a fan of the team. And it was just like, hey, no matter what happens, I have to go do my job. Don't care if we intercept it for a pick six. Don't care if we're down 30. Like, it's worse in those situations a lot of the times. Like, I can't be any worse or throw a bad ball. I can't kick a bad. Do you find that, because it now affects me in the way I watch football, like even the Hawks, I'm unemotional about it because I'm like still stuck in the fact that like I can't get off baseline or else it's going to affect my job. I still haven't gotten away from it. How do you watch football now?
I might be the opposite. Maybe it's because I got a few more Busch Lights in my system or something when I'm watching the games at this stage of the game. But no, yeah. I mean, maybe there's a little bit of that there. And I totally get what you're saying. That's what you got to be even keels. You got to focus on your task at hand. Cause you practice the whole week and you only get 10, 12 shots. Like, you sure as hell better be ready, whether it's a quick change of possession or a build up for a drive. But, no, it's fun to watch the game. And I tell people too, like, that's what I did for a living for like almost 10 years was watch football from the sideline and then go play like, you know, 1-2% of the game. You have like a front row seat to kind of observe it. But now, yeah, for sure. I mean, you're kind of maybe a little bit less, and you're watching kind of the in between of the game, right? Like, I always enjoyed observing. We have some fun seats now at Kinnick, me and a bunch of buddies, where we're kind of right behind the visiting bench, and it's just kind of cool to see, like, you know, what happens with the D line. They come out, they talk to the coach, they're pulling the plays out, they got the iPad, they're doing this. You're watching the specialist warm up. Who's doing what? Like, who's jacking off? Who's not doing what they should be doing? And that's a unique thing about football too, right? Is like, you got a 3-hour game, and even if you're starting on the offense or defense, like, you're off the field for most of the game.
Yeah.
And then you're playing a 5-7 second play, and then you're waiting another 40 seconds to play the next one. So it's like the in-between of football is – there's a whole science and an art to that. And, of course, all the other crazy stuff happening with the coaches and looking at the plays and the sheets and all of that. Like, it's – no, it's a fascinating world. It's fun having sort of that inside knowledge now as just a casual fan to be able to know what all those guys are going through.
Are you a heckler of the opposing team?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I got to wear some glass. I mean, I don't get recognized very much because I tend to blend in maybe a lot more so than some other guys, but yeah, we're not, you got to find like the weak gazelle. I mean, we keep it all above board. It's
Nate,
all nice.
So some guy 20 rows over is like, I think that's Nate Kading telling that kicker. So
you can't
hide
in Kinnick though, right? Like, I mean, we're right there. Like, we can reach out and touch some. But we were down there for, I think it was the Nebraska or Illinois. Like, we were inside the head of like the assistant D line coach pretty good. He actually turned around and like threw his sunglasses up at one of the guys standing next to us. So it's, you know, but you try to be like very kind of enlightened about it, right? We're not like, you're not like, you know, hillbilly
smart
and
heckle,
like
yeah.
in Next the heckle, up. Like we're like getting deep in the weeds on like technique and like that kind of stuff. I'm like, it's easier to get them to turn around when they're like, oh, these people know what they're talking about a little bit more. Right. So, or you watch like the long snap to pick on the long snappers, but like, hey man, those laces were at like 5 o'clock. That last field, you better get down there in the net and practice your snaps. Like, we don't want to see you screw up the next one. And they're like, oh, these guys know what they're talking about.
You're so giving me anxiety.
Yeah.
What about the guys? Some teams have like the little the porta potty like on their sideline.
Yeah.
And my buddy, he snapped for Indiana. He said he came out of it one time, and one of the fans is like, "You didn't wash your hands."
Yeah. You get in there, and I tell you what, there's playing with a bunch of Big Ten guys out in San Diego. I mean, to a guy, they'll all tell you Kinnick is the hardest place to play. I mean, it is unique how close you are to the fans right down there, especially you get into those night games and it's There ain't nowhere to hide.
Hostile. We still want Bama and Kinnick in December. That's a dream.
One quick side, going back to Kluver's story there about that Ohio State game. Left out in the intro, you know, obviously All-American kicker, longtime San Diego Chargers kicker. People forget 2017 Ohio State honorary captain.
That's right. That was a fun day.
That was a fun day. People forget
that. That was one of my favorite experiences at Kinnick, honestly. And it was fun to come back and you know, give a little talk the night before, but just being down there for that night game. And then, of course, that was an all-time banger at Kinnick, too. And that was tons of fun. But like I said, I mean, Kirk does a great job of keeping us old-timers involved. And, you know, I kind of got lucky to match up with that game. But that was pretty cool.
Whatever juju you gave us, it was great.
You know, I take all the credit in hindsight.
You should be the captain every game.
I don't think that they're ever going to bring me back as an honorary captain. Or
don't say that.
Hardly, maybe even in the build. Like, I got invited back, I think, the year after by like Coach Woods to like come watch camp, and I don't think they'll let me back in the building ever again. mostly because of this podcast and my affiliation with Drake. As a kicker, obviously you go on and have a great career in the league, and like you're so much more polished and a better light on the program than somebody like me or Kevin would be. Or not Kevin. Kevin's pretty polished. As a kicker specialist, when you get the call or the email or whatever to come back and be an honorary captain, what was that like?
It was cool. I mean, it was – and I've always tried to – I mean, I like to think that I've always known my place in the locker room, right? So it's like even if you've had success and you're doing really well as a kicker, like you're still a kicker in the end. So it's – I tried to keep my comments – kind of brief, knowing that. And I try to weave in some self-humiliation in there. Like, you're not going to go in as a kicker and have the same kind of rah-rah, let's get fired up, guys. Like, let's get rolling. That kind of approach. So I just tried to think of something that was timely. And again, that was a big, big game for Iowa, and it was a night game. And what was Ohio State? Top five or two or something. It was pretty highly ranked. And I just kind of thought back to I think my message to the team was, you know, thinking back to all the big games, and a regret that I had was not taking that time in between the big moments to kind of sit there and appreciate it. So, and I think that's just great advice in general, is like, hey, take a second when you're driving in on that bus and before you get off, and just like look at all those fans on Melrose that are sitting there and just like enjoy that piece. Or if you're out there for the national anthem and Kit Back and Black's playing and you're coming out of the tunnel in the swarm, like come out, take a step outside yourself for a moment and just appreciate that you're there and have the gratitude that you're there in that moment. Don't get caught up in, you know, the nerves and the anxiety and all those sort of things. And that was just my message to them, was, hey, this is a big game, but it's also a tremendous opportunity to be out there and like make sure that you're grabbing yourself every now and then and reminding yourself of how cool it is that you get to get out here and do it.
And it's crazy because that usually I never did. Like, I never had, like, took the moment to like, hey, this is a cool opportunity. But that particular game in the fourth quarter, like, I think we're up four touchdowns at that point. The crowd's just buzzing. It's electric. And I think it was like halfway through the fourth quarter, I finally took a moment to just soak it all in. And it was, it's just a beautiful, beautiful feeling with Saturday night in Kinnick when the Hawks are rolling.
No doubt.
It's crazy. That was your message. I didn't remember or don't remember a lot of the specifics of those Friday talks that the honorary captains gave us over 5 years. I wish I would have took notes better and like committed that to memory, because there was a lot of great messages. I do remember you talking about taking the moment in, and specifically talking about your last bus ride down from the hotel and like going across the river, and you're like, you remember like how cold the glass of the bus was, and like, and that stuck with me. It helped me too, honestly. Like, sometimes you're like,
it's weird because that, and anybody that's listening that's even played high school football, like those are the, you think back on it now, and it's, I get asked, I was like, you know, what's your favorite kick? What's your favorite game? You like all this, like the things that you remember, like the visceral experiences are those things, right? It's like a, like you can smell it. You're driving down Melrose and you can see the leaves changing and you can smell the barbecue and you can see the folks out there and the music, and you step off the bus and it's the chill of like an autumn day in Iowa. Like those are the things that stick with you when you're now an old timer like me looking back on it 20 years from that, you know, or going back in the locker room and singing the fight song. And like, those are the things you remember. It's not like, oh, I had cover two on that one time when the cornerback had the interception, or you had that great snap on that one field. Like that's the shit that just like is part of the business, but it's the other moments that you like, those quiet moments that you have with yourself. And it's also like those other awesome moments that you have with your teammates and your friends and the night before eating ice cream sundae. Yeah. Like it's like that kind of stuff, right? Like, and it, when you're in it as an athlete and you're there, like you don't appreciate it because you don't know to appreciate it. So I think that was really my message at that time, is like, hey guys, like you got the tiger by the tail, like the world's here. It's watching. You got one of the best programs in all of college football coming right into our house. Like this is a special thing, and just make sure you take a chance to appreciate it.
That being said, are there any kicks, college or NFL, that you do specifically remember, or you were like, wow, like I feel more pressure than normal for this one, or anything that sticks out in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, my standard response to that is you always remember the misses more as a kicker. So, you know, missing the big kicks or doing those things are always the ones that you remember. That's just the way you're wired. I think anybody would tell you that that gets to a certain level of playing. It's those. But then I think for me, what I would like to think of my hallmark was not only making some big kicks, whether, you know, I made a 54 yard or something to clinch the division and in the NFL and other game winners or big kicks or, you know, kick to win the Alamo Bowl or whatever it looks like, is like more of the, like we talked about, is like you get judged as a kicker by your level of consistency. And for me, it was like, hey, let's string together 10 weeks in a row without missing a single kick, without making a single mistake. Whatever's thrown your way, whether that's a bunch of extra points or that's a 50-yarder in the rain or the wind or whatever that looks like to me, it's like it's the culmination and the streaks and just the attention to detail and the commitment to perfectionism is like that's to me is like kind of the big picture of it. And like each kick to me when I was during my career was big. Like every time I stepped out, I mean, I know it's cliche to say, but it's like they all matter, you know. Yeah. Like if you miss the fucking 25 yarder in the first quarter, like that ended up being a big kick, you know. You're gonna get crucified and you're not gonna sleep well for five nights because you missed that kick. Like they're all big and they're all important.
Is there any, maybe there's a young high school snapper kicker listening to this and they're struggling with the mental side of it, which is, God, by the time you get into college and you're potentially a starter at Iowa, it's like 90% mental. Like, you know how to kick a ball, you know how to snap a ball. You're not going to be physically, you know, there's no obstacles physically for you to go out and do what you're supposed to do. It's basically all between the ears. Is there anything you used, cues, routines to calm those nerves and feel confident when you went out for each rep?
The best advice I give the young kickers that I work with is that I have no advice for you on that. I mean, there's things you have to walk through the fire of hell and the screw up and the booze of 70,000 and having to wake up the next morning and read your name in the front page of the paper, and nothing worse than walking into that team meeting room after you missed a field goal or two or screwed up or something and you lost by six and that, like, I mean, I know it's cliche to say, and the same thing rings true for life and business, is like your best opportunities for growth and learning are when you struggle and there's challenges and there's adversity, right? Like, and I work with all sorts of high school kickers who think that they got the thing licked, and then a humility is right around the corner in that position. I that's what I tell them. I go, hey, I can sit here and tell you every like sports psychology 101 and all the hundreds of different things that I ended up doing to help me be mentally tough and pre-kick routines and all of these sort of things. And, you know, I've made a highlight tape that I'd watch every night before the game and again the morning and a cue card that I mean, there's all sorts of things, right? But like those were all things that I had developed myself over time as a reaction to not wanting to feel like shit again because I just missed that field goal.
Yeah.
So, and I think Drew Stevens now is a great example of that. Like, he incredibly talented, amazingly talented, and he went through some adversity his sophomore year. Mm-hmm. And I think he got humbled in some ways, right? But you talk to Drew now, like I do, and I mean it's a different person, and I can guarantee you he's an infinitely better kicker now than he was prior to the adversity that he went through his sophomore year. And there's nothing a coach can say, or I mean that's just the journey. You walk it, you do it, and all the kickers that end up come out clean on the other side are ones that there's no way to avoid it. You're going to miss some big kicks. You're going to have some bad stretches. And do you have the humility and the strength and the toughness and the support system around you to learn from it, pull your socks on the next Monday in practice and go out there and, like I said, one practice at a time, kind of we're focused on what you need to do that day and then look forward to that next opportunity on Saturday to right the ship.
Quote today, I guess they talked with, I don't know if they got some time with the coordinators or what, but Coach Woods thinks Drew Stevens could attempt and make a 68-yard field goal if he had to in an end of half or game situation.
Yeah.
Probably closer to consistently around 58 any time in the middle of a game.
And you can see it. I mean, Kirk's not afraid to, nor is Coach Woods, to get him out there. He has a freakishly strong leg. Yeah. I mean, I think, and there were probably even a couple instances last, I don't remember off the top of my head, where they could have trotted him out there where the downside risk of missing it, is maybe a little bit minimal. I mean, obviously you guys know the chart, like the probability goes like this, the further out you get on the horizontal axis. But no, he has any, like right now has an elite caliber NFL leg strength to him. And I think he's through his journey as a college kicker has put the other pieces together in terms of the mental game. And it was awesome to watch him last year, looking forward to seeing what he does this year. And it would not surprise me one bit if he drops in several 60 plus yard field goals this year, if given the chance.
I need it. I need that.
Yeah. Let's let it rip. What is the college record?
I don't know, but I
lost track of the NFL record now too. Like those guys,
I think it's right around there for the NFL.
I
65 or something. 66.
I might be a KF homer. I want to say someone hit 68 last year to set the record. I might be a KF homer. If
69 yard field goal.
If there's
college,
one,
that's that record.
1976.
If there's
69 yard field goal in the 70s.
Flat straight. Flat toe.
Toe basher, baby.
Yeah.
Toe basher.
Yeah. If there's one nitpick I have with KF, it's that we have had the leg strength in our kickers to kick field goals and we choose to punt or go for it. And that pisses me off. Let the peacock fly, man. Let him hit the field goal. And I understand you miss and now all of a sudden the opponent's on the 35 or 40 yard line. I don't care. We got Phil Parker.
Does college go from the spot or do they go from the, like the 35 automatically?
From the spot.
They do. Okay.
So I don't like, we got Phil Parker and the Doughboys. Like,
yeah, they're there. They'll do it. They'll stop them.
We'll be fine if we leave them at the 50. Like,
yeah.
Well, in previous years, man, we had a guy with an absolute lob wedge just pinning him.
That's true. We had Torrey Taylor. Yeah. That helped.
No. A lot of that circumstance. Like, I think it's Drew to like get a legit shot, given the probability, exactly what you said, like the defense, pin him deep. Play like you need that kind of end of half, end of game sort of.
I mean, I think we were set up for. I think it would have been a 67 yarder for the Iowa State game last year if we.
Yeah,
man.
And some of that has to. And you guys know, like some of that is like field conditions, wind conditions, like.
Oh
that,
yeah, yeah.
And I think it just. Oh, we could have kicked XY. Like it might have been back in the wind. I mean, how far is the one the Iowa State kid hit against us? That was
53, I think. Yeah.
And Marshall hit that one against Pitt. That was what, 59?
57.
57?
Yeah.
He had a cannon too. Like it'd be fun to see him and Drew go head to head on leg strength.
It's hard to imagine that Drew has more whip in his leg than Marshall Kane.
Yeah, but I'd pay for that. We got to get Marshall in his prime and man, Drew right now. That'd be fun.
I would love to see that because Marshall was special, and I'm still shocked he wasn't able to catch on an NFL roster. I also, speaking to a Groza Award winner, how bad was Keith Duncan snubbed?
Yeah, that was awful.
I mean, did that hurt you to your core? I mean, that was unbelievable.
Yeah, and I presented that at ESPN that day too, and they didn't even let me. They literally, Chris Fowler handed me the card. I didn't know. And I go out like backstage when I walked out, and he's like, okay, it's, who is the guy? It was somebody from Georgia or something.
That ended up winning. Georgia Blankenship.
Because I was all in my mind.
Rodrigo Blankenship.
Like, Iowa to Iowa. I'm going to hand this off. We were in Atlanta at the College Football Hall of Fame. It was when they did the show live.
It was supposed to be a storybook ending.
Yeah, this is going to be sweet. But yeah, that was an all-timer. Those things, those postseason awards get thrown to the wind, man. It's hard. Like when I won it, I actually won it my junior year, and I had a better year.
Yeah.
Senior year, I missed one field goal my senior year. I was like, I don't know, like 20 or 21 or something like that. But
I got kind of worked up. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like a consensus first team All American. I'm like, I'm going to be back to back. This is easy. And then they gave it to some other random dude. So
it's
like,
this is easy.
Not a random dude, but like, I'm not bitter anymore. I'm not bitter at all.
Probably an SEC guy.
I think it was. I think it was some guy from like Ole Miss or something.
Jesus. We don't want to keep you too long. I do want to hit, and I'm going to let Grant ask some questions too, because he always has the good questions. You have your own podcast that you do. I don't know, or maybe you still do it, or maybe not. With the Corridor, I've seen several of them. You have the white whale that we haven't gotten on the show. I think you interviewed KF.
I got KF. It was awesome. We did Caitlin Clark. We've had Lisa Bluter. It's been fun because I've I enjoy this sort of setting, and I kind of naturally curious. We have a business podcast where it's called Real Success for the Corridor Business Journal. We've been doing it now five. We don't have 600 shows like you guys do. I think we only have like 60, 65, 70 or something, but it's fun. I do it once
a month. We're really about the quantity over the quality.
I like it.
Seriously.
Just at bats, baby. That's all that matters. It's great because I get a chance to kind of sit down with CEOs and leaders and small business owners and a variety of different folks. We basically talk business. We talk a lot about their professional journey. What makes them tick? It's a little bit of like how I built this, maybe meets a little bit of like Tim Ferriss-y sort of stuff, but it's been a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. Selfishly gives me a chance to kind of meet some new people, learn about their careers and all that sort of stuff. So it's great. Yeah, the Kirk one was awesome. I think we did him. He was our 50th guest, so he was kind enough to spend some time and chat. So it's a lot of fun. I enjoy it.
I'm scared to ask him.
Yeah, the worst. He'll say yes.
I know, but then it's like
off season. Now's the time.
We actually have to do a good job.
I gotta like prepare and like it's probably it's a whole thing. At some point, it's gonna happen. I plan on getting to 1,000 of these, and I kind of have KF as like number like 1,000 on in my mind. So we'll see. And then like I mentioned, the entrepreneur stuff. You have your hand in a bunch of different stuff in the Iowa City Coralville area, don't you? Like, what's that been like getting into the business world after the playing days?
It's been fun. It's been a fun transition. I went back, got my MBA at Iowa. I've been super lucky where I've been able to be partnered with and involved with some great people. Really kind of work in two disciplines. I would call my full-time job is in real estate development. And work for a real estate development commercial construction company, Hodge Construction, which is a 40-plus year company here. We build a variety of commercial buildings and real estate development projects. So that's awesome. And then also serve as a kind of co-investor, co-founder of a collection of restaurants in downtown Iowa City.
Yes.
And lucky, that's where the real partnership has been amazing. I've got some lifelong friends that are the operators. We've got a great team there. We have Pullman Bar and Diner and St. Birch Tavern. We recently bought a lot of the Hawkeye fans listening out there, alumni. Remember the Hamburg Inn number 2?
Yeah.
We recently bought that.
It, right? It was going to go under.
We restored that, which has been a super cool. I was a history major at Iowa and there. Love local history, and that's just has a soft spot in a lot of our hearts. And that's been an awesome project. And we're a little bit over. Yeah, pie shakes. Breakfast all day, super super fun project. So we're pretty proud of the collection of restaurants there, and the team does an amazing job. And our mission there is really like, we think Iowa City's the best college town in the world, and we want to play our part. I'm a big believer in the role that restaurants and these sort of gathering places play in the quality of life in communities, especially places like Iowa where we don't have mountains and oceans and all those sort of things. Like, folks listening, like whether you're from a small town or Des Moines or you're living off into the world, wherever, like picture your town that you live in or your hometown without like that amazing coffee shop or that pizza, that family owned pizzeria or whatever that looks like. And like, imagine Iowa City without the airliner or George's buffet, you know, like these sort of places. And then the new people that come in and do new and creative things. And it's like, so that's been really fun from an investment perspective. And I'm really involved on the front end, kind of helping pull the projects together. And then once they get launched, our team does really an amazing job. And I kind of help be a cheerleader and drive business and help with the strategic development of those businesses and restaurants. So it's a fun 1-2 punch and keeps me, you know, it fills kind of the creative bucket and the business bucket and able to kind of bring some projects to life. So it's been a great transition. I've been fortunate enough to be able to come back to my hometown in Iowa City and play a little part in moving it forward.
No, it's awesome. The Iowa City food scene punches way above its weight in terms of how big the city is. It's honestly awesome to live here.
Yeah, we've got some great chefs, people that have moved back. If people haven't been for like a finer dining experience, the Webster is Sam Gelman and his wife Ryan just opened that on the north side. They've gotten recognized by the New York Times. They do amazing kind of Midwest cuisine, and it's a cool variety. We can always get better and continue moving the ball forward. But we're big believers in Iowa City. I think it's a pretty special place, and just trying to play our part and making it better.
I got a business strategy development thing for you.
Got any idea?
Yeah, ready? Washing up walk-ons. Great advertising opportunity.
I like it. Now we're talking.
We could do
a
little.
Do we have a month this year, don't we? With isn't there like a home slate where it's like we got like three home games?
Four in a row, yeah.
Let's give me that month when all your listeners will be back in Iowa City. And we'll just do like we'll just hamburg in the crap out of the thing or something. Like we'll
do it before the season. We'll get you a good rate.
You have no idea.
Have your people call my people. We'll get it down.
I will do that. I'm not joking. Everybody, this is inside baseball. You're listening to A Deal Get Done right now. I will turn half of every hour we do into a promotion for your restaurants. I swear.
Just start flipping different shirts on, hats. Like,
I'll wear whatever you want me to. We do, and this is no bullshit. Our audience is about as high converting on ad reads as it can, as I love it gets. We can definitely talk. Grant, anything you got before we waste any more of this man's time?
Yes. No. A couple questions for you. So, career in San Diego. Playing in Denver at least once a year for a long time. How excited do you as a kicker get to go play at the altitude there? Do you guys just get super excited? Like, oh, I'm going to try a 70-yard field goal today. Like, what are you attempting while warming up? Like, where does that get realistically during the game? Just talk about the experience of being a kicker and going to go to the high elevation.
Yeah, great question. It was the best. Like, I kind of hit the NFL was kind of weird. Like, we were lucky because we were still the dinosaur 20-yard extra point guys, but we were also like kicking off from the 30. We had like the shittiest time for K balls, like all that sort of stuff. And I wasn't, as my career got on, I wasn't known as like this kickoff specialist. So like that was always like, all right, I'm going to get like 25% of my touchbacks today. So I was like, tell Philip Rivers, like, all right, like let's score a bunch of touchdowns. I got to pad my stats, but it's legit like a 5 to 8 yard boost.
Wow.
I would say. And it's just like, you just got to get it up into the jet stream and it just carries better. Oh. And the other cool thing there too, is in the visiting locker room, in the locker room attendance room, they got this cool wall that like all the people that have signed that come in there. And those guys are my guys. So every time I go there, I bring a few $100 and they give me two huge garbage bags of Coors Lights. So I would do that. And it was like bus 4. And the cool thing about the Denver, you guys know the Denver airport's like pretty far away from the downtown. Uh-huh. So I would tell all the guys, hey, bus 5's got the Coors Lights. And we'd have like 10 cases of Coors Lights on ice and these big black garbage bags in the back of the bus. It was like a legit like 4 or 5 Coors Light bus ride after the game out to the airport.
So hell yeah.
that was maybe one of the better things about the Denver, amazing. The Denver deal. But now we had a pretty good stretch there in the division. Denver, you know, KC hadn't really quite taken on. I think we beat Oakland like legitimately like 6-7 years in a row without losing to him. So it was the AFC West. We were rocking and rolling then.
Marty Schottenheimer is your coach, right?
Yeah, I came in with Marty and then finished with Norv Turner.
He got fired after like a 12-4 year or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. We were all, there was like eight of us that made the Pro Bowl that year. It was back when it was in Hawaii, and it was crazy because we all went out. It was a good year. I think we lost to New England that year, and maybe the conference semi, not the conference championship, but the game before. And
unforgivable, like, to lose to Bill Brady and Tom. Or
yeah, Bill, we did that, but we did lose to them again in the AFC championship game at New England.
How could you?
But we were all on the plane and we landed, and it's like everybody's phone started blowing up, and it was like, yeah, Marty just got fired. And it's like, wait, how do you get fired when you're 12-4 or something?
That's
like
wild.
And won the division. But yeah, pro sports, man.
So then following up still with the Chargers, have you ever seen Philip Rivers curse? Have you ever gotten out of him, maybe off camera? No. Any cursing from him?
No. Zero. He was the man. I mean, he was you talk about like all football family. Like he would every now and then have a beer with us on the bus. Like he was there. But I mean, you talk about, he didn't curse, you know, family guy, great guy, but like as fierce of a competitor as you would find. Like he was all business. He was a dude's dude. So he was amazing. He was a great get for San Diego. Came in the same draft class that I was in, and he was awesome.
Yeah, competing for the largest family in America right now, I think.
Are they still rolling? I kind of lost track of that.
Probably.
That's like a thing where it's like, you know, they can say no, but do you ever really believe that they're stopping? You know, like once you got eight, like what's stopping you from 15? You
know, they might be closer to 15 than eight. Last time I heard,
they definitely are. I think they're at least 12. I think
that's absurd.
12? No, that's, how many swing sets you got to build there? That's like a
bro. Five swing sets. I'm building one. So, okay. I got a text from my wife 5 minutes ago. She put our daughter down, and Nate, as she left the room, my daughter said, "Mommy, I just love my park."
Nothing better,
dude. I'll build for another 35 hours. Don't care. If I can get that out of my daughter, the 20 hours of building the swing set in the back has been worth it. So,
and then, so this is my last question for you. There is so you scored a touchdown against Ohio State.
I did.
Early on in your career. Awesome, awesome moment for those who haven't seen it. Do you have any advice for other specialists out there who maybe also tried to score a touchdown against Ohio State and maybe wasn't able to accomplish what you accomplished?
Find the pylon and run for your life. I mean, you talk about relief. That's a feeling of relief. It's a weird feeling though, man. Like you just don't ever have the football in your hands. And you kind of get it, and it's just like, okay, like you just go. But like we had practiced that play forever because you don't have anything else to do as a specialist in the 3-hour practices that you sit there and watch. It's just like literally just the long snapper catching it, flipped it over his – or the holder flipped it over his right shoulder and just sprint for the right pylon. And I still think we might have set a record for uncalled like holds out in the like wide open. And if I remember right, like Jim Tressel, I think threw a complete – pissy fit there on the sideline because there's right in front of it there's like multiple holds, but it was that was cool, especially having practiced it a bunch. It was fun. It was I think maybe probably our only attempt, but
we got the record, Grant. I practiced it a lot too, and it scored every time. And
hey, we weren't naming sure, anyone no, specific no. It could have been any other specialist.
We've done a thing.
Yeah, when's a
couple years, right? Like punt or field goal. Maybe
I don't know what LaVar's doing. You got to talk to him.
When's he going to reach back in his bag of tricks? He was on a little run there from like 2017 through 2019.
Teams better be scared because I know he's got about 40 of them just on the book.
I'm calling it right now. Special teams touchdown on either a fake punt or field goal. It's going to happen.
Fake punt would be insane.
Need that.
We ran a fake punt against Ohio State this year, didn't we? And they Kirk Blue timeout like a second after we snapped
it
or something.
We were going. We were going to. And then they called it dead. Yeah,
that's a good call. And every game, one's usually in, maybe not every game, but 75% of them, it's
pretty much every
kind
game,
of sort of kind of there, right? Like, again, it's like a stars need to align, right hash, right situation kind of deal. But
got that call, what were you thinking? Because I remember what I was thinking.
That's one of those where you're actually kind of pumped up, right? Because you're just kind of dumb and young enough to be like, all right, like the chances of you turning into like some fucking meme or like SportsCenter highlight for the wrong reason is pretty high. So it's like you try not to think about that, and it's just like you try to get yourself pumped, you know, a little bit pumped up, but you also got to kind of fake the fact that you're about to kick a field goal,
right,
kind of thing. So it's weird. I mean, just like, hey, get it and just react and try to just go, man. Run.
Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Run, Forrest, run.
Yep. Be good if you got a good pass on it too. Dude, thank you so much for coming on, man. This was awesome.
Yeah, this is sweet. Congrats, guys, on the 600 shows, and can't wait for this Hamburg Inn takeover this fall. It's gonna be great,
dude. I'll dress as let's like get a cake shake outfit. I'll just wear it for the podcast.
We'll do food reviews on every item in the menu.
We could do like
10 out of 10, 10 out of 10. Yeah.
We could do like a walk on platter for that month or something. And we'll send it. And that's where we can activate. Hey, go to Hamburg, get the walk on platter, or else we're beating your face in. Okay.
I like it.
The walk on platter, like
every item on the menu. Like,
it was super fun project. You got to go back into like 70 years of history of the restaurant. And like, that's kind of one of the things that they became, is like all these really kind of different, unique omelets. There's like a Zadar omelet, like a Goose Town was like sauerkraut, whatever. So we need the like 1 month, like the washed up walk-ons omelet, and y'all can create like whatever's in there. And
we're big on eggs around here. The Iowa Egg Council is one of our sponsors.
Yeah. We do all our eggs are local from Farmer's Hen House.
Come on.
Collection of Amish Mennonite farmers down by Kelowna. So it's,
let's go.
We'll Let's go.
This partnership's going to be off the walls, dude. Nate Kading, everybody, episode 600. Thank you guys for being here for 600 episodes. I don't know how many. I know there's several of you who have been here from the beginning, listened to every single one. We hope to do 600 more. Grant and Kevin will surely be gone at that point, but I will still be here. I promise you. And we will be sponsored by the Hamburg Inn.
One kick at a time, baby. One kick at a time.
We'll see you guys next time. Until then, peace. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons, where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.